You're listening to highlights of the Creative Processes interview with actress and environmental activist Sharon Lawrence. This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
But that transformation was key to my next step as an artist, to knowing that's what acting is. It isn't just posing. It isn't just being a version of yourself. It wasn't performing. It was transforming. And I think that artists find that in many different ways. And as actors, there are many ways into that. But I would encourage you to, if you're an actor, know your own equipment, know your own psychology, and use the great teachers that are synthesized in my favorite teacher's book. Larry Moss is who I studied with later, and there's a book called Intent to Live that distills down Uta Hagen and Stella Adler and Bobby Lewis and Stanislavski, the great teachers at the group theater, the method that needed to be altered to be constructive rather than destructive to artists. David Melch's mind is so singular because he uses language in a way that defines character. That's what all good writers do, is use language to get to the heart of something. And he would use malaprops for Sipowicz, and Milch loved playing with that. And as someone who played the love interest of such a unique character as Sipowicz, so it's through Sylvia, and that's David Milch's understanding, that his wife humanized Sipowicz as an addict, as a very flawed human who had many addictions. And that's David Milch's. He's now suffering Alzheimer's, so we won't get his words again. But the words that he has to offer are timeless because he studied Robert Penwar, and he had so many mentors through his vast literary education. And that's key. I love speaking Noel Coward words. As a bon vivant, as someone who wrote musically, who wrote to charm us, to amuse us. So going and reading Noel Coward is, it's important for actors to learn those cadences, to learn the musicality of a certain era. Of course, Shakespeare. I think of the female playwrights who delight me now, whether it's Carol Churchill, you know, that singular mind and playing with gender that she was so good at, and challenging gender norms. Seeing Cloud Nine when I was in college blew my mind open, because men were playing women and women were playing men. And of course, Shakespeare was doing it too, but hers, I don't know, it was an intimate, it was a small theater. And that's another thing I encourage actors and audiences to do. Go see things in small theaters. See it close up, because that will excite you to learn the craft as an actor get. First time I am married to a text is often, in my estimation, the purest version that will ever exist for me. It takes a long time to let words play you. Actors often talk about, well, I mean, the word is play. You're doing a play, or you're playing a character, whether it's on screen or on stage. But the goal in that flow state that anybody who creates understands is where it's playing you, where you are out of the way. That's true. I was born this way. And by this way, I mean an extrovert. And I had a safe and uncomplicated childhood. And that is luck. You know, you can argue, if you believe in a more metaphysical sense, that we choose these scenarios that we are born into. If I made a choice, I made a good choice in ways to be a storyteller who can, without harm, play characters who are challenged, like Katherine Graham. I've never experienced the trauma that she's experienced, and so I'm safe when I play her. But I think that there is something to be said for coming up in the era that I did, which meant that I was watching women evolve in our culture. As a young woman, I saw and benefited from the freedom of women who were just coming into the workplace, who were living as single women in television shows like the Mary Tyler Moore Show. That was so influential. Ask any woman my age, and you will recognize the subversiveness of a character who not only had a career and was unmarried, but could speak in certain episodes about birth control. I came about in an era where the birth control pill was being normalized as my sexual maturity was coming about. I had choices. I had bodily autonomy. And the images of women that I saw were appealing to me. They were able to make a choice to pursue their creative power, and it was celebrated. And that is why I believe the vibration of the characters that I play have that quality, because I witnessed it and it was normalized and celebrated in society for me. I played queens who were given respect early on in my career. And I was playing sexual beings who gained power from their inherent power. They were given power and they were powerful because of their inherent sexual quality. So when you marry those two things together, like I was able to do as a reader, absorbing stories and material and writers and styles, you start to build a matrix of what qualities you can bring. Add on to that, one of the first transformative acting roles that I ever played was Electra in an adaptation of The Greeks. It was in college at UNC Chapel Hill, and I really did transform for the first time. By that, I mean I was playing a character that had such great pain. Electra is she has a daddy complex. She is betrayed by her stepmother. She has an odd relationship with her brother. And she is exiled. She is set to inherit power, but she's exiled and goes mad. But there are women around her who gather and see that wound. And she's very much a human. She's not a goddess. She's a human who is stripped of her power, but she mourns that. And in our version, she's doing self-harm. So I'm playing things that I'd never played with before. We created a version of her that was very androgynous. I chopped my hair off to play her. I wore a burlap sack, so all sexuality was gone. That was something that was very interesting to me as a 20-year-old to not use that. I carried an Uzi. I wore a black leather motorcycle vest with one arm removed and a football shoulder pad out the side. So she took on the power of the male and yet the vulnerability of the female, because I used a knife as, like, you'll find, you know, this is trigger warning, but using a knife to dull the pain by not cutting, but grinding into her palm. I'd never witnessed these things. They were suggested by the directors, and I became somebody else. And it didn't mess me up because I was old enough, mature enough to understand what I was doing. But there's a playfulness apart from the political aspect of this. And the term white rabbit, red rabbit alone draws you in. And I'm certainly in a lineage of many respected actors who have done this. So I had a faith that it would be worth my time and is structured in a way that supports the artist. But what it does require is a freedom. And that freedom, as I was talking about earlier, when a text plays you, is what actors are always searching for. And it can take years to accomplish that, where you are carried by the material. You aren't ahead of yourself. You're not behind yourself. You're right in the moment. And we will be grappling with what is true. What is art? What is journalism? What is being represented as truth, as fact, when it is indeed created out of an intention, whether it's benign or nefarious? You mentioned improv. That's important too. Viola Spolin wrote the definitive book on theater games. And Alan Alda was a mentor for me. And by the way, he's got a great podcast, Clear and Vivid, where he has committed to teaching scientists how to communicate their work better to lay people. And it was through the use of improv that he does that. So if you are a scientist that wants to be able to get that grant to make your work accessible to others, you can follow along in Alan Alda's podcast, but also recognize that theater games and improv is a great way to learn how to do that for yourself. It's a challenge, but it is a freedom that you probably won't find in other ways. And it's structured. There's a process. It isn't a free-for-all. It's very well designed to have you open up in a way that will delight you and encourage you to communicate better.
As you say, all these great writers, they're building upon the writers from history. And that
they are products of their time. And he will say so. They are products of their time. It was a boys' club. But that does not negate the power of the poetry and of the aspiration for transformation. And we as women and we as underserved communities, as communities that were not privileged, when you read Maya Angelou, when you read Ta-Nehisi Coates, when you read Lynn Nottage, she wrote Intimate Apparel, beautiful words. We must read all the cultures. We must read. It's my homework too, my homework now. I'm at the point of my life where championing those coming up and others is the joy. It is the joy. Technology has been what's changed so much. We are at risk of the unintended consequences and lack of sophistication or wisdom. And our wisdom has not caught up with our technology. The signal gate, I think, is a prime example of hubris as much as carelessness. You know, I don't think it is a coincidence. It may be ironic, but I don't think it's a coincidence that it was a journalist who misused the technology because of their inherent drive to the fatal flaw in the culprit's choice that they just can't resist telling the story to people who do not need to be in the room. And that carelessness is due to an impulse to broadcast, appropriate or not, right? And I'm using that term loosely, but there's a training, a personality, a drive to, and that is why a free press is so, I believe, will always be a goal of a free and progressive society, and why it is always a goal of an oppressive society to control it, because we know the power of it. In Kay Graham's time, for those people who listening who may not know, Nixon resigned, our president resigned, because the press, in particular the Washington Post, successfully uncovered wiretappings. And that alone, it's interesting to see now that taping conversations and revealing conversations and confidentiality is all now, I think, very much at risk because our technology makes it so easy to do so. But he and his party, the Republican Party, believed that it was indeed a breach of democracy. And democracy dying in darkness being a motto of a national newspaper is very true. But she used her power and her influence at great risk because the president was still controlling and the FCC was controlling their licensing, their ability to publish and to broadcast because they owned radio and television stations. And we see now the levers of government being pulled indeed in an extraordinary way because those few people and few entities and corporations that control the chain of global media are concerned about access and the government, this administration's choices to control what will be broadcast. And that has to do with not just licenses, but the hardware. And by hardware, I mean satellites. You know, this is something that only big dominant power can control, and the value system and beliefs that people in power hold put us all in either a vacuum or an open system or a closed system. It's a sacred thing that we do, and I don't want to make it more precious than it is, but it is a sacrifice in a way. So you must understand how to use the power of that to be constructive rather than destructive. And good programs and good teachers know how to do that. And good performances will offer that up and know that it takes time to feed yourself to be able to do it. I'm relying on the artists that are coming up, and we've got NEA grants that are being cut and grants here in California that are being cut. We must invest in artists, and that's going to take private money. We can't rely on the government to do it. It's going to take private money. And that's why I'm a board member of a theater company raising money and supporting them with my own money, because I know we must grow artists. They don't just happen. Yes, my background in dance, which I didn't start young, and I wasn't a dance performer. I always performed. That was how I was built. So I didn't have to overcome a lot of societal obstacles for me to express myself in the way that was natural and kind of God-given. I mean, I talk about it as software and hardware. My father was a journalist, but he was also an amateur actor and really good. And he had encouragement back in high school when he was there in the 50s that encouraged that in a public high school system. So it was a value for my family. And I don't discount that. As a matter of fact, I count it as one of the great blessings. If I had, you know, been the way my husband is, which is as an athlete, and given that, you know, that freedom to pursue, then I wouldn't, you know, I might have chosen a different field, but this was what I was gifted with. And I say that because it came through my hardware, the way it was wired, and the software in the culture that was built around it. But it was up to me to develop it as a tool. So ballet was a really important foundational aspect, because what it taught me was connectedness to my body. I know the difference between a movement that's inherent to Sharon, and that is instructive and descriptive and evocative of another type of carriage. I walk differently as Katherine Graham than I walk as myself. I know how to find her walk based on a couple of things. First of all, she was tall, and she was insecure about that. So I'm not tall, but I know how to seem tall, because there's a carriage that women who are uncomfortable with their height sort of universally talk about, and you can see it. They bring their shoulders down, and oftentimes they look underneath their eyes. They're bowing their heads in deference, for one thing, based on a culture and an era in which then they were raised. They're looking down at people based on their height, but they also don't want to tower over. So it's a combination of those things. I have often said that if I can get the hair right and the shoes right, I understand the carriage of the character. So for certain characters, you want to be in heels. It gives you a feminine quality, whether it's one that is sexually powerful or vulnerable, right? That you're teetering on a platform that gives you less stability. In Catherine's case, I wear flats because she does. She did often. And those allow me a flexibility of movement. I don't just play her. I play her husband. So, and I play her mother. So I position myself to play men. As people have said, why would you rather be called an actor than an actress? And it took me a while to really understand this. And it was another actor that I heard say it. It's because if I am called an actor, I can play anything. If I'm called an actress, I can only play women. So the term actor, I do embrace, because I play men, and I play a man in this play. And that maleness is a stance, and it is a groundedness. It has to do with where you feel comfortable. Actors often have to lose their inhibitions around their pelvic area, and that's because it's so highly sexualized. I got involved with ocean conservation because if you have seen under the surface and you've seen a dead reef, and that is ocean acidification, and rising temperatures because of the human effect on the planet. So when you see a dead reef, it's a skeleton. So I couldn't ignore that. And I got involved with PADI, the Professional Association of Dive Instructors, and did some public service announcements for them. And I was hosting a special about dolphins. They have a quality almost like dogs that makes them want to get up closer and use their bodies to absorb us. Whether a dog will do it by sniffing, right, their oral sense, and a dolphin will do it by their echolocution. And that's why they can recognize when a woman is pregnant, because they're mammals, and they also recognize the condition because they live with females that are pregnant. They'll scan you, and you can hear it, and you can feel it in a way if you're lucky enough to be close enough. And that scanning, right? They'll bounce their sound out from their melons, and they'll read you. We learn through animal work so much. And by animal work, I mean taking an animal and studying it, really going to witness an animal in person for long periods of time and recreating that in front of people. If you've done the exercise and you've been guided through it in a way, and you can also do that with children too, because children oftentimes tend to be free. But it's important that we observe animals in nature as actors, as we can tap into a very primal aspect of a character if we have allowed ourselves to transform and transform in front of other people.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to these highlights. To listen to the latest episodes or learn more about participating in exhibitions or interviews, click on subscribe. Thank you for listening.